Friends. This is Carolyn Evers greeting you this afternoon, and I am just so delighted to have a sister of the light here with us, Suzanne Ward. And we have asked her son Matthew and my son Sean and any other delighted beings who wish to come in and chat with us to join us here in our little group conversation. And Suzanne, welcome, dear heart. We are so glad to have you here today.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a delight, with emphasis on the light, to be with you again.
Yes. I just love having you.
Thank you.
Before we get into your books, there is a question that I had in my mind, and I don't know if Matthew has discussed this with you or if it's even something that you want to comment on. But since it's on my mind, perhaps this is on the minds of other people. And that is that reported bomb plot in the New York City Metro tunnels. The recent one. Has Matthew commented to you on this?
No, we haven't talked about that. Life has been full. My daughter has been visiting, and her fiance before that was here. And so just let me check in with him right now.
Oh, this is even more exciting.
Yeah. Well, it's a pure farce.
It's a what?
He says it was a farce.
Oh, okay.
This is another scare tactic of the darkness. It is all in aid of keeping people on the edge of fear or immersed in it. The war on terror, which is another fallacy, a huge fallacy, it is necessary to keep that war in front of people so that they are willing to go along with our government's policies that are so restrictive, so in such denial of even human rights, not just our constitutional rights, and to give President Bush wartime privileges. So the answer, in short, is it never happened. It's just an information release.
Well, I thank you for checking in with Matthew, because I was getting the same information.
I'm glad to know that. I always love confirmation, Carolyn.
Don't we all? Now, with regards to that, there's another aspect of that situation that I would like to ask you, and perhaps Matthew is willing to comment on this. We're talking about these things that are being planned and disseminated for fear and so forth. And my question revolves around the truth of this being uncovered so that the truth be known to the public, so to speak. And I'm wondering if Matthew or Sean would like to comment on that. In other words, is there something in the wings that's going to come forth and let us know that this is a charade?
Well, would you like Matthew to comment before Sean?
Well, I most definitely. I'm not sure if he wants to comment on this.
Okay.
Right now. He's sort of giving you the podium.
Sean, thank you for that. I don't want to monopolize the program.
No, you're not monopolizing. We're here asking.
Okay. Actually, this is something that Matthew has addressed in even going back to the last book, which was published in December of 2003, that, yes, the truth is going to emerge about of the avenues of deception that have been foisted upon us. It is necessary that that all of the truth come out so that consciousness can be raised among not just the people of the United States, but the world, about how this, well, really, it goes beyond our government, Carolyn. It goes to what some people call the elitists, others call the Illuminati. Matthew uses the Illuminati as sort of an umbrella term for all of the various agencies and groups that have infiltrated every aspect of our lives and, in essence, controlled us through their deception. So in order for the consciousness raising and the spiritual renewal to come, the truth has to precede it. Otherwise, people will continue to be led, to be duped by falsehoods. And the pervasive darkness that is behind all of what has been going on in third density life, which we have been living in and we are emerging from. And the truth, I have read that somewhere, so probably it's attributed to somebody who's worthy of being remembered. The truth will set you free, and it will.
Yes, that's why forces are working so hard to keep the truth from being revealed.
Oh, absolutely. And they are tenacious. They are powerful. It is not easy to dislodge the entrenched darkness that is out there, because the positions that some of these people hold, the public positions, but actually it's even those who are not in publicly recognized positions of power, who are even more powerful, or certainly in some cases just as powerful as the positions that we recognize, the leadership positions, and this is not just in this country, it's really throughout the world.
Before we talk about your books in particular, I would like to remind the audience that they can call in and join us. Our phone number is 1-877-876-5227. So please call and join in on the fun. I think everybody has to know of you, Suzanne, and we've had your name up on the website so people know that you're meeting here with them today. But in case there's somebody out there who has been in hibernation for a while and hasn't read the paper or hasn't looked at the internet, can you just give us sort of a little thumbnail story of how you started working with your son, and then a little encapsulated thought about each one of the books along with your website?
I'll be happy to, Carolyn. Thank you. After Matthew died in 1980, when he was 17, I sought some sort of comfort, I guess, or a connection through psychic readers, well, through mediums, and eventually, within a year, I was led to three who did not know each other. They were in different states, And yet all of them, the second gave me rather an update on the first, what Matthew had told the first that he was doing, and the third built on the second. But where all of their stories were exactly the same is that when the time was right, Matthew and I would communicate directly. As much as I wanted that, I felt that telepathic communication was such an extraordinary gift, and I felt that I was so common that I wasn't entitled to it. But I always held on to that hope. Apparently the time was right, almost 14 years after Matthew died. This was in January of 1994. And what is not known, because it isn't in the book, and for good reason, because it could have been, I think it would have been, simply a confusion. But Hatan came to me one night when I was just sitting at the kitchen table wondering what was the purpose of my life, would I ever talk with Matthew? And his energy surged in like being hit with a Mack truck. I don't mean it was painful, but it was powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, my body just about leaped off the chair. And all he said was, Suzanne. His energy is unmistakable. Mm-hmm. You have wanted to serve. You have wanted to be speaking with Matthew. You know what to do. Get on with it. And that was that. So the next morning, I started writing a note, just a chatty little note to Matthew. And I had been told that fairly quickly I would get an overlayer of thoughts that I knew were not my own, sort of like a parallel thought line, sort of like railroad tracks, but definitely not the very same thoughts. And it was either the third or fourth note that I was writing when I heard, Mother, this is Matthew. Write what I'm saying. So I started that in shorthand, but I was so nervous that my shorthand notes were undecipherable, and but at any rate, I won't belabor that. I started at the computer the next day, and it just, you know, without any lapse in timing or my receiving him for over an hour a day, we talked, and I recorded it. It was a perfectly natural conversation between a mother and a son, and the first book, Matthew, Tell Me About Heaven, all of the dialogue is our verbatim conversations during the first 3 or 4 weeks that we talked. I mean, parts of it I obviously wrote as background, but all of the dialogue is exactly the recorded conversations that Matthew and I had.
Can I just interject something, dear?
Oh, please do.
Yeah, now here's what I want to say is a statement that you made, because I think this is very important. When someone gets to the point that they have actually reached someone on the other side, and that is the statement, I'm paraphrasing what you said, but something to the effect that you recognized that this is Matthew because, in a sense, you recognized his personality. It wasn't like he had changed into some other being, so to speak. It was perhaps the way he phrased things, the way he talked, the way it felt in your heart, you knew this was your son.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely,
and I just want to mention this to people.
And he sent me images of himself.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. with some of our dogs, in his apartment, with his two very special souls, who are his family. Yes, all over, with scenery, so that I could see some of the environment in Nirvana. And Carolyn, this might be a good place to interject something that is so very important for people to know. That telepathic connection is not unique with you and me. And some of the other receivers who may be very well known too. It is everyone's birthright.
Yeah.
It is a layer of the soul. And in this time of the higher vibrations coming in, telepathic connections are opening. And everyone needs to be aware that it is not only the souls whom we love or benevolent souls who would like to reach us. It is those baser souls as well. They all have equal entry unless we protect ourselves in the light, unless we, you use the expression, knowing in your heart,
mm-hmm.
that this is a light connection. It may not be, say, a family member or a beloved friend. It may be another soul of the light who wants to give some valid and valuable information, but it also may not be. There is a website that Matthew has recommended in several messages. It's www.awakenedhearts.com, and on that site, there is information that is extremely helpful in letting people know how to identify the source and how to protect themselves against reaching a source in the darkness. Now, the ways that or maybe I could say the conditions that are invitations to the darkness are, especially to novices, are extreme self-doubt or going into ego over it, you know, through either, whatever you think. Oh boy, now I've got it, you know, am I ever the greatest? So that's another tentacle of energy, a negative attachment that's an invitation to the darkness. Certainly illness, fatigue, stress from any source, you know, could be worry about finances. All of those situations or conditions are invitations to the darkness.
I would say a big one, too, my dear friend, is fear.
Oh, yes. Well, you're absolutely right. Fear is the biggest opening for the darkness. and you're right, I could have built on self-doubt that...
Somebody is on with you.
Thank you.
I think we have someone who wishes to join us.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay.
We're listening.
Hi, Carolyn. Hi, Suzanne.
Okay.
Greetings.
Okay, greetings. I'd like to maybe ask maybe both you ladies if you can help me. I've had a couple of experiences, and I'm in my mid-50s, so...
Pardon me. Carolyn, I hope that you can hear the caller.
She's very light. If she could speak up a little more, it's true. We're having some difficulty.
Okay. Yeah, I can barely even hear a voice.
Okay, hold on one second.
Out.
Is that a little bit better? Hello?
Suzanne, can you hear her?
Hello?
Not really very well, Carolyn. Can you?
Not as well. She's very light. Are you talking on a portable phone?
Yes, I am.
That might be the reason.
Okay.
Can you pick up your regular phone?
I don't. Okay.
Or
you can hold on. I'll
number.
Go to a regular phone if you can hold on.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah, sometimes those portable phones, they don't come through very clearly. While we're waiting for her, perhaps do you have anything else to say about this website and
I would be happy to because I know Celeste and David.
Carolyn, Suzanne,
I'm sorry.
Hello?
Oh,
yes,
okay. Dear.
Is this much better?
It is. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for waiting. I'm sorry I had a cordless phone. I didn't know that was a... I've been listening to the show, and I called in because I've had a couple of experiences in my life, but I'm unable to figure them out. And I'm a very grounded person, so I know it's not my imagination. 2 years ago, I had a brother that passed away at 45. But when I was praying and meditating, in my left ear, I heard, "I will be leaving you." It wasn't
You were there fading again.
She said in her left ear, she heard
him, or what you heard.
In my left ear, I heard a voice, and it was my brother's voice. And he said, "I will be leaving you soon." But that was not my brother that passed away. It was my other brother.
What, he was living?
Pardon me?
He's living?
Yes, my brother's living. It was his voice. He's living, but it was my other brother that passed away. Mm-hmm. And I'm very spiritual, I study metaphysics. I have a lot of psychic friends. No one could really tell me why did that happen.
I'm a little confused. The brother's voice that you heard, is he the one that passed away, or is he the one that's living?
He's the one that's living. Other brother passed away.
What do you think of that, Suzanne?
Well, I'm baffled by it, and Matthew said that, It simply is something that he has no way of connecting with, and so he's sorry, but he can't enlighten you about that quite unusual experience.
Okay.
But he is saying that he doesn't feel anything ominous about it.
Okay.
Is there a possibility that he can explain that a little bit?
Yes.
He doesn't feel ominous.
Simply from the energy around the caller. And he would like me to explain that the reason he can connect with her is through the energy of this telephone connection. Please don't ask me to explain that. I don't understand. Except that I do know that everything is energy, and that energy can be directed, but it cannot be separated. And in this case, he connects well, obviously he's connected with me always, but through this phone line, he can feel the person who's calling, as well as you, Carolyn, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not feel anything ominous in her energy stream.
Okay.
I'm not in such a position to help you either, because when I'm speaking to someone on the other side, it has been always someone who has passed over.
Yes.
I haven't had an experience where I have heard somebody telepathically and they are on this plane,
mm-hmm,
and have heard them, but I don't think that's impossible. You know, we have people who can see into the future. They can see into the past. We have distant healing. I don't think it would be such a far reach that people on this plane couldn't communicate with others, because we can pick up thoughts out of the air. We're like great radio devices. So I don't think picking up a thought from someone who is living and you're listening to them, or you're hearing this and they're not in the room with you, I don't think that's so far-fetched.
Well, it has only happened to me once, and the only reason I explained to you, I'm a very grounded person, I'm a very spiritual person, and like I said, I was praying and meditating. It only happened to me one time, and then my brother passed away.
If you are praying and meditating, remember, you're in the alpha state.
Yes.
And communications between people, I think, in the alpha state is much easier to pick up. But I think you should take what Matthew has said to heart. He doesn't feel anything from what Suzanne is saying. I don't think he felt anything negative about the situation.
Oh, I didn't. You know what? I didn't take it negative at all.
Oh, good.
Because I know I'm with the white light. I know that.
Good.
So I didn't. I know I have. I that was the farthest thing from my mind.
Good.
The only reason,
curious,
because my brother's voice that it came through, I'm very close to him. I'm his caretaker,
mm-hmm,
and it was disturbing to me, of course, hearing that. But I know I'm very sound, and I took it as a blessing from God.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a
mm-hmm
forewarning. So, like I said, I'm very grounded, and I do Reiki on myself, and I do distant healing also.
Oh, that's
so
beautiful.
I'm very, very grounded. It's not that I'm hearing
mm-hmm
voices. Also, if I may share a few other things that have happened to me.
Certainly.
I was a period in my life where I was very sick, and I was getting these Lupron shots. It's like a hormone to shrink fibroids. Well, it affected my diabetes. And during the night, I'd be in a deep sleep, and I'd hear, Linda. And I'd jump out of bed, and I'd run to the other room where my brother sleeps, and he'd be sound asleep, and I'd be going back to my room, and I would start shaking. And that's a sign that your sugar is real low. And I'd get my meter, and I'd check my blood. It'd be dangerously low, 50, 52. I'd eat something, and I'd go right back to bed. And he'd be sound asleep in his bed.
Oh,
and I'd hear his voice
warned,
yelling, Linda.
Yeah.
Is
well,
that,
you know, we do move at sleep. We mm-hmm do move on the inner plane. And that sounds to me like something that happens. There is, among all people who love one another, there is a connection. There is a tie. And here you were both sleeping, and he felt that danger for you on the psychic level, and he warned you, and indeed this was a gift. I think it's beautiful.
Oh, I know. And you know what, Carolyn, it was so interesting, because I'd go into his room, because he has cerebral palsy, and I thought maybe he fell trying to get out of bed, and that's why I would go running into his room, and I would hear my name, and he'd be in a deep, deep sleep. And it only happened about 10 times. I'm no longer on the shots, so I'm not in that danger anymore.
Right.
And it stopped. It's gone away. But, Carolyn, may I ask you, I've had other people tell me, I'm psychic myself, but I don't have enough confidence in myself, and I always second-guess myself. Maybe Suzanne can ask Matthew, is there something that I can be doing? Because I pray to be the best person I can be. I'm praying to be open, but maybe I have a block.
Now, do you mean open to psychic work or open to spiritual work in general?
I'm not looking for work or for material gain. I'm looking for myself, for my own personal spiritual growth, mm-hmm. to be the best person I can be, for guidance.
Well, and did you want to offer something, Suzanne?
Carolyn, I'm sorry. I missed part of that. I don't know if you heard the clamor of our dogs.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
And it
okay.
was a delightful sound because the pets were involved.
But what the caller is asking,
she's asking Matthew if he has some thoughts as to what is the best way to serve and open up to spirit. Is that a fair question, caller?
Yes, okay. Yeah, Carolyn, yes.
What Matthew is reminding me is something that he also has mentioned in a number of his messages, and that is that all of the answers for each of us are within us, and looking for answers externally is definitely second best. It's a plan B, that through whatever means you use, because I understand there are many forms of meditation that are effective for people who want to receive messages from their soul. And in intuition is others like instinct and inspiration and conscience and aspirations are also messages from our souls to our consciousness, but to get an answer to something specific as opposed to the general pathway that your soul chose to follow in this lifetime, ask that specific question of yourself, and then just be still and listen, and the answer will come in something that your intuition recognizes. And he said beyond that, there really is nothing that he could offer to a specific individual, because that is applicable to all souls.
Well, I love your answer. I love Matthew's answer, and I would like to thank Matthew for that. Now, I could give you another thought as to how to pursue this. Not saying that Matthew isn't correct, because Matthew is correct, but what I'm sensing here is you have a doubt in your ability. And when people have a doubt in their ability, sometimes even when they hear this prompting from spirit, they hesitate. Oh, did I really hear that? Did that really happen? Is that what I thought? And when here's another, you do meditate, you said. So
yes.
Here is a little practice that you can do in meditation, and maybe this will help further. I believe that it is our I Am presence that sets up the events in our lives. In other words, people come into our lives, events come into our lives, and this is programmed, so to speak, by our higher mind, our I Am presence, and it is that portion that we have made agreements, or we have defined missions in our life. And if you want to connect to that source, and again, this is what Matthew was saying about going within.
Yes.
One of the best ways to go within and touch that source is to feel appreciation. This is very important. When you go into meditation, you breathe in, and then when you breathe out, you breathe out the thoughts of appreciation and you send this up to your higher mind. You're actually doing all of this internally, you know.
Oh, yes.
And so you work at that, breathing in, breathing out, getting into a deeper state, and it sort of says to your higher mind, I'm ready, I'm listening, what do you want to tell me? You'll feel a connection, and then after that, you're breathing easily. You then send up this request that you are ready to hear instructions as to your mission and what you're supposed to be doing, and two things will happen. You might hear something directly, or you might see images, you might see colors. And if you do not, if you see the images or the colors and you don't understand what it is, then you ask your angels to help interpret that for you. And the answer could come while you're awake, or the answer could come in a dream. Does that help?
Yes, because Carolyn, I'm very appreciative. Before I even get out of bed in the morning, I thank God just for another day. So the part of appreciation, that's one thing I don't lack.
Well, you're saying it. What I'm adding to that is you feel that.
Oh, of course. When I pray,
you send that feeling energy up to your higher mind, and that should work. That should help.
Okay. All righty. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, we're so glad you called in and touched base.
All righty. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you,
Susan. Bye-bye.
Blessings to you, Linda.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you again.
Where we were, Suzanne, when we had that question, is we had just finished up, I think, about what Matthew had suggested about going to the awakened heart and some guidelines as to how to protect yourself, make sure that you're talking to a soul that is on the higher level. And I brought out the fact that if you're talking to a loved one, their personality should have the same feel to it. So
oh,
that you know that you're really
right.
Talking to that individual.
Words that we recognize, or, you know, terminology, phraseology,
mm-hmm.
a tone of voice, laughter, well, you know, of course, I have only my experience, obviously, but I have heard from many others.
Hello.
And of course, you know, this was Sean.
Hello.
I think we have another caller. Yes.
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
I was calling in to say ask a question that. I had two siblings pass away, and I was just wondering if they were able to pass along any messages today.
Does Matthew do that, Suzanne?
He really can't, Carolyn, because it's too many layers of energy to go through. Matthew is not in Nirvana. He still considers it his home because of the dear soul whom he considers a godchild and her family there. But Matthew, for the last 7 or 8 years, has a new spiritual or light service, and that is that. By invitation of civilizations, incarnate civilizations, in this galaxy and many others, he travels to their homelands to evaluate and help them upgrade their spirit realms that are to them the equivalent of Nirvana to us. There are so many layers of energy to go through that he can't do what he once did when he was in Nirvana. Now, he can give messages to people with whom he is already bonded in love. And, of course, our energy is never separate. Actually, I am an aspect of Matthew's soul. And so there is never any difference in the energy layers when he's speaking to me. But he can't connect with souls that with whom he is not bonded. I hope that makes
sense. No, I understand what you're saying, and what I find interesting about that is that you're an aspect of Matthew's soul. That's true with me also with my son. I just find that very fascinating.
Carolyn, who told you? Did Sean tell you?
What, that he was an aspect?
Uh-huh.
He showed me. What he showed me was the two of us looking like the, you know, the DNA strands where you revolve around, where these two strands revolve around one another.
Uh-huh.
That is what he showed me. That is what we are as two souls.
But it was God who told me.
Oh, can I just tell this caller one thing, and we'll get into that.
Absolutely. Yes. And I'm so sorry that Matthew is too to disappoint you.
That's okay. I was just wondering if that was a possibility.
Now, what I'll say to this caller is, if you send me an email,
uh-huh.
I will go into Theta and try and see if they are in this area, that they can give you a message and want to. When I'm talking on the telephone, I am in the very active state. The mental brain is in a very active state, and I have to settle down and get into a very meditative state to receive a message of this nature. And
mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm saying, if you would send me an email with these two people's names, I'll see if I can what I can find out for you.
Oh, okay.
It's just now I'm not. My brain is too active
okay.
with talking to be able to make that connection.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay, I'll send you an email then.
That sounds good.
Okay, now, thank you then.
You're welcome. My pleasure. Now, bye. back to you, Suzanne. I love this. Tell me what God said.
Oh, well, before I do that, may I mention something that is directly related to what you were explaining to her, that you are very actively in a mental state right now.
Yes.
Something that Matthew applies across the board, therefore it is has been his answer to a number of people who have written to me, and that is that when people focus on the intellect, they tend to overanalyze, overcalculate, and the energy that they are putting into the intellect is blocking or at least greatly diluting their ability to receive the messages from their soul, which really come, you could sort of say this, I think. Matthew says, yes, Mother, you can say it. the messages come through the heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sensing. It's a feeling. It's a knowingness. And when there is such focus on the intellect, that can't happen. You know, the messages from the inner voice, the I am presence.
There's another point that maybe might help some people to understand, too, is that our brain at this point is divided, and each side of the brain has a different function. And so when we're very actively engaged, one side of the brain is working very hard, and it sort of overworks to the point that the message from the spiritual side is having difficulty getting through. And so if you're going to if you're going to get through and receive information from the spiritual side of your brain, you have to be relaxed almost next to the meditative stage. And it's just what you're saying exactly, Suzanne, just kind of a for people who need a little more, I don't know if that's scientific, but perhaps a little more explanation of that.
Well, that's good. I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you in case you wanted to continue.
No,
I think that we rather keep building upon what we say, and I think that's wonderful because it adds more clarification,
mm-hmm.
Or hopefully it does, to your audience.
Before we go on, would you be kind enough to give us your website? Because I don't think you got into that. So people who maybe are not aware, who haven't been able to purchase your books yet, could go to your website and order them.
Ah, okay. Yes, thank you. www.matthewbooks, two T's in Matthew in plural books. So www.matthewbooks.com. And also on the site are all of Matthew's messages from December 2003, when the fourth book was published, and the messages are a continuation of that. So they are dealing with current events in addition to spiritual information that is so valuable for us to know during this unprecedented era in Earth's history. Not just a recorded history, but from Earth's very beginnings, sort of with a capital B on beginnings.
Would you just give, say, the title of the first book and kind of like a little a sentence or two as to what that book covers?
Yes. Matthew, Tell Me About Heaven. A very descriptive title there. it's a first-hand description of the afterlife that we call heaven. Matthew said that the proper name is Nirvana, that very likely heaven comes from haven, which is how that realm, that spirit world was known. And he gives an excellent explanation of how Nirvana was started long before it became our spirit realm. It was a place of safety, therefore a haven for the light warriors who were either wounded in battle with the dark forces or were so fatigued that they needed a respite in a sanctuary. So at that time, it was the haven for for physical bodies to rest and recover before going back into battle with the dark forces. When those space wars left this vicinity, and Nirvana was still there, it became the spirit realm for the souls who transitioned from physical lifetime on Earth, and that is the next stage of life. It is by no means a permanent residence for anyone. for instance, Matthew has not reincarnated in another lifetime. Actually, he manifests a body that fits in with whatever civilizations have invited him to visit them. But it is simply the next stage of life after physical life on Earth.
You know, thank you for that explanation, Suzanne. I have a little question about this, and I don't know if you know this. For people who have a near-death experience, they haven't exactly died, but they, you know, for all intents and purposes, look like they've died, but they revive. Is this, do you know if this is where those souls go to get this picture of heaven?
Oh, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is. Now, there are some fascinating aspects to the near-death experience. Those souls do travel to nirvana, but there is not the separation between the physical and the etheric bodies that there is when the physical body dies and the soul makes the full transition to residency in nirvana. Another fascinating aspect of this is that whatever the person having a near-death experience believes about heaven is manifested for them. This is a brief visit only, and it would be such a really a trauma for them to go into an atmosphere that is vastly different from their religious or spiritual beliefs, that whatever their belief system is created for them during that temporary stay. Another aspect of this is that even though during the near-death experience, they are actually meeting loved ones there, perhaps angels and spirit guides, if that is what they are expecting. If they have not completed their lifetime missions, even though it's natural for them to want to remain there, because the overwhelming energy of love is so profound that it's natural for them to want to remain there and not return to Earth, where there is still so much negativity and disappointment and trauma for so many souls. And of course, none of that is in nirvana. The family members, whoever is there, talks to them about the unfinished business that they have here on Earth, and so it's the soul's decision. However, they do return willingly. However, their memories of what they actually experienced there are dulled because they are back in body, in third density, and our brains at this point have not evolved to the point where actual memories of other densities can come through clearly. Therefore, what they remember is that no persuasion was necessary, and they feel that there is that connection with wanting to do something here. They're not aware that it has anything to do with a soul contract or pre-birth agreement, but they do have the sense that they needed to come back to fulfill responsibilities to perhaps young children, perhaps to a sick parent, whatever it is. It's something that they consciously realized they really wanted to take care of. And what the difference in energy densities does allow to come through are the sensations of feeling the intense love. So that awareness does come through. The love bond that connected them with their beloved people, and that's why they were waiting there for them, that very clearly comes through. But the conversations, and this gets back into the intellect, the conversations, the actual reasons that they agree to leave that total beauty and love essence that is so pervasive, the reasoning parts, the cognitive parts, have to be translated into something that is acceptable to the third density mind.
You know, this might be a good time, Suzanne, to remind people that the love bond is never broken among souls.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we know that the life of the soul is eternal, and the love bonds that we have never are broken. Never. I mean, we in this lifetime, we probably are aware only of the love bonds with the people whom we know in this lifetime. You know, like yours with Sean, perhaps with your parents that they have passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Mine with Matthew. And my dearest friend of this lifetime, we are aware of those. Once we reach nirvana, where we're not limited by our third density brains, the love bonds that have been formed in other lifetimes are also eternal love bonds. I mean, our capacity for love is infinite.
Well, that could even be said of people that we meet here on Earth. We haven't met them before, but as soon as we meet them, we have this instant recognition of this energy that is going between the two of you, and you're remembering these past love bonds.
That is true. We don't think of it as you just said, but the energy that pulls us together, and there's you know, an instantaneous feeling of love in other experiencing. We knew these people consciously, and since we spend multiple lifetimes with the same souls, this is so natural that some of us also chose to embody in this lifetime to experience this unique era in Earth's history.
I'm curious about something, Suzanne. Has Matthew told you that, or perhaps you remember, that you've had other lifetimes together besides this one as mother and son?
I don't remember them, Carolyn, but yes, we have had lifetimes together from the beginning. I was the first expression of his soul into my very own independent and inviolate soul. And what he has told me, and God did too, my talks with God, if I may digress just a moment.
Oh, we can always talk about God.
Yeah, okay. My talks with God that he selected for inclusion in the third book do not mention everything that God and I have talked about. I mean, some of it is very, very personal, of course. But he selected those conversations to explain who he is. It's very hard to summarize everything that God said, but I just want to mention that he has a marvelous sense of humor, and each of us, each soul in the universe, is a part of God. Now, I think of him as in his umbrella self, and he mentioned that just in our talk shortly before you called. I was looking out the window sitting here waiting for the phone to ring, and this is such a gorgeous window to look out of. These tall fir trees, the birds, the squirrels, and I was thinking, oh, thank you, God. And so he popped in. But and now I have forgotten what I started saying, Carolyn. Can you?
Well, you were talking about the conversations that you've had with God, and you had a conversation right before you were waiting to come on the phone, and I suspect that you were going to give us a little gem of a story as to what you and God were talking about before the phone rang.
Well, I do remember that it was God who explained to me about Matthew's and my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came in, but Matthew had told me before that we have had many other lifetimes together, and never as adversaries.
Yes.
All of the permutations of relationships that, you know, there can possibly be, and
yes,
not necessarily familial.
I've had that experience also, that he and I have explored every possible relationship that two human beings can have with one another.
You and Sean.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, I can certainly understand that. And it goes into friendships and
mm-hmm.
Students and teachers, and probably sometimes a relationship that is a person whom we so respect, you know, really with all our hearts, and want to emulate and do. And so there is that connection too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the spectrum. He also explained to me that even though my relationship with the person I mentioned as my dearest friend of this lifetime, and we became friends, you know, in our first meeting, Matthew explained that throughout our history, we had never had an adversarial relationship. It hasn't been as many experiencing lifetimes, nor as profound as Matthew's and mine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the uniqueness of the positive relationships always is really rare.
You might be interested in this little story. Sean said to me one time, Mom, would you like to see what my favorite Lifetime was together? And I said, of course. And so I joined with him, and it was almost like we were going up an elevator, and the elevator stopped, and we got off, and I could see the two of us in that Lifetime. It was really cool.
All right, I envy you. Forget that that's something I'm not supposed to do.
I don't know. Maybe you could ask him sometime. I'm sure he could probably conjure up his favorite Lifetime with you. You just haven't asked.
Well, that's true. I'd like to mention a book that I read that it touched my soul. It's called Journeys with Brandon. I can't remember the woman's last name, Catherine someone. And Brandon is her son, who died when he was about Matthew's age, 17. And he came back to her. She and he had these journeys together. And she described them. And, there were several of them. And they were so fascinating. And I kept thinking, oh, Matthew, why don't I have any recollection of something like this? Why haven't you led me through experiences like this?
Because I think each one of our missions are a little bit different. In other words, if everybody did the same thing, I think it's that we're all here to offer a little different facet of this life between the two worlds. And so she's doing that.
Yes.
You're doing something else. You know, Matthew's working with a lot of current events.
That is absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
However, I got my answer.
Oh, okay.
Matthew finally just said, Mother, you'll see. I got to the end of the book, and I cried. I mean, I laughed, I cried as I was reading about Catherine's and Brandon's journeys. And I was not prepared for the ending.
Oh.
He left her the second time. He said, I will not be back. We have completed everything.
Wow.
And my heart broke for her.
Yeah.
She grieved twice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could have handled that. And so Matthew said, Mother, this is why.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think that what it comes down to is that you mentioned this, appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
I have thought of it as thankfulness.
Mm-hmm.
That what we need to feel is thankfulness. We need to recognize the blessings of our lifetime. There are blessings. I mean, in the midst of grief, there still are blessings. And if we allow ourselves to just accept these, I mean, certainly one blessing is knowing that we never lose anyone. We tend to think of, well, I lost my son, I lost my mother. You know, no, we didn't. Their presence in our lives is different.
I think that's an important
physical
part.
Companionship.
Mm-hmm.
But we have not lost them. They have not lost us.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing this is a blessing. Knowing the kind of world that they are now living in, I mean, what a blessing for them. If we can feel joyful for their lives, it's a matter of our perspective. a matter of our thoughts, and our feelings will follow.
And they are leading life abundantly.
Oh, are they ever, without any of the limitations that we have mm-hmm. here, that we're still dealing with.
Yes, I think we need to mention that for perhaps people who are grieving over someone that they feel that they have lost,
mm-hmm.
Because they're not always aware that this individual that they were so close to and that they love so much is really going on to new adventures if we allow them to do this. In other words, we need to release them or else that grief pulls them back. Do you care to comment a little bit on that?
Yes, I do. It's the first chapter of Matthew, Tell Me About Heaven. And believe me, I was certainly guided in how I organized that material.
Mm-hmm.
My grief was so deep and so prolonged. And other members of the family, too. I don't mean that I was worse off than they. But the energy of our grief held Matthew back. We had no knowledge of this. And it is something that is so valuable for people to understand, that the grief carries such a profound energy. It's so magnified and it's so powerful that it holds our loved ones. It holds them back from living fully in nirvana. They are so closely connected with us that they feel what we do. And this is such a profound feeling that they cannot move forward. They are held almost in abeyance. And if we realized that we were doing this to them, of course we would never do it. So knowing this is invaluable to us, as well as to the people that we love who have passed on.
Maybe this would be a time, Suzanne, if something comes to mind, some thoughts as to how one can get over grief. Do you have any thoughts about that? Because yes, we need to release them, but we're human. You know, this person that we love, that we've had all these connections with, is now on the other side. Can you give any perhaps bits of wisdom to those who are having a hard time getting over this grief?
I don't mean to sound as if I'm trying to sell books here, but if people would read Matthew, Tell Me About Heaven, where Matthew describes the vibrant and diverse life in nirvana, all of the choices, all of the learning opportunities, all of the spiritual growth opportunities, the hobbies, the travel, the recreation, the reunions. I mean, their life is just phenomenally active and joyful and moving forward, and the environment there is incredible beauty. Their abilities to manifest everything from the type of home that they would like to the type of weather that they would like. I mean, it is so totally amazing that if people could envision their beloved family members and friends in that environment, they could only feel joyful for them. It's yes, we miss them here in our lives, able to know and envision their lives. I mean, that would so greatly minimize our grief for them. I mean, the grief is for us, let's face it. We grieve for us. We don't grieve for them.
Mm-hmm.
But it will lessen the grief that we feel by knowing what their lives are like. Had I known that, had there been a book like this when Matthew died, I would never have, well, I would never have held him back. I would not have wanted to. I would have had answers to my questions. Are you an angel now? Where are you? Do you have a body? Who's there that we know? Is there music? What are you doing? Are you just resting? I was a product of 35 years of Christian church dogma. And boy, was I good accepting everything without question. And
you were good at it, huh?
I was so good at it. And everything that I was hearing from Matthew was so, so, so different from what I had been taught. We will see our loved ones again. Oh, really? Where? And what will they be like? And how can you be so sure? You haven't died. How do you know this is true? I went through all of the anguish of trying to let Matthew go, trying to get on with my life, trying to feel that I would, well, I just felt, I'll never be happy again. Yes, I have my other children. They're also sad. The energy that we put out, that affects our loved ones. Matthew explained that he never let go of the love bonds, but he had to really work at releasing the grief bonds so he could get on with his life. So I know that's not a simple way, Carolyn.
I'm really not trying to sell
books, but the information in all of these books was given to enlighten and comfort and guide us.
Why you came, Suzanne. You came to do this.
I did. It was my mission. Matthew and I signed up to do this.
Right.
And so even though I have never cared about money.
Mm-hmm.
I have lived hungry. I have lived with not knowing where I would live next. I have, at age 49, I lived in 3 different places in 1 month because of my financial situation. So, and I'm saying this because I have to sell the books. We give away or donate or just send boxes to people who will donate. But it's a very costly process to print books and keep up a website and the mailing, all of that. So we can't just not sell them. But the emphasis is on this information is invaluable.
Your emphasis is on service, Suzanne.
Pardon me?
And I understand that, but being in the 3-dimensional world, we have to pay our bills. Basically,
we have to pay the bills.
Well, you know, I think it's very inconsiderate of the banking system. You write out a check, and they expect money in that account.
Yes.
And so you have to go along with that. So,
yes. And,
you know,
and more mortgage lenders want money. So do the grocery stores and the gas stations. And
yeah, and the gas stations are taking more and more of it. So, you know, what we might say, friends out there that's listening to this, if you don't have any of Suzanne's books at the present moment, go and you could relate to anything that we're talking about or have any need in any of this area, go to our website, which is what? You want to give it out again, Suzanne.
Okay. Matthew has two T's and books is plural. So it's www.matthewbooks.com. And you can read about the books there. You can read a sample chapter of each. And, you know, just those alone will be enlightening. And if you feel motivated to get them all, I really recommend buying the four book set, because there's such a great price break over buying them individually.
And so what would the fourth book set cost?
Okay, including shipping, it's $60 in the United States for the four books, and it's $75 for foreign shipping. Almost always we lose money on the foreign shipping, which runs anywhere from $20 to $35, because obviously we have to send them, you know, by global priority,
yes, and that's
two
expensive.
Books to an envelope,
right.
You know, that sort of thing. So this isn't a money-making proposition. It, you know, there is never going to be a fortune here, and that's fine. That fame and fortune is not ever been of interest to me.
Your fame, dear, is in service.
Well,
did you hear what I said?
I did.
Your fame is in service.
Well,
and that is what it is
Matthew
all about.
If Matthew becomes famous, that's great. And
no, what I mean is, I didn't mean that in a negative way. What I meant was that when one serves, that is their fame, is what I meant.
Ah, okay.
The very act of serving is what your fame is to the world. And see, I understand that. You know, you're doing what you are doing because you have a passion for it and because you want to serve humanity in this manner. And
yes,
that's what I meant. It was a compliment.
Okay. Okay. And Matthew is saying, Mother, you're protesting too much. But
no, I was just giving you a compliment.
I know, but he was referring to everything I had been saying. He said, you know, actually he said, knock it off. You're protesting too much. Get on with the other things.
Don't you love their point of view?
Oh, I mean, you know what I have found out is that of all of my many, many sources, and they keep growing, God is the one who speaks to me most down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then Matthew does come in with something to get my attention, like he just did. But God speaks more casually, in more plain vanilla terms, than any of the others. And so I asked him one time, I mentioned that, you know, I guess I was expecting him to be more like a preacher, you know, a sermon on the mount.
You're expecting him to be
something.
Like that dogma lesson.
Yeah. But he said, well, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but of course we do. You know, you're part of me. I speak to you the same way that you think, the same way
mm-hmm.
you speak to others.
Mm-hmm.
How could it be different, Susie? You know, sort of like, hey, girl, think about it.
I'm curious about something, Susie. My son, Sean, goes to other planets. I know he works a lot on Sirius. Have you found that Matthew does this also, or is he kind of working more in the Earth area?
No, he's not at all in the Earth area. As I was mentioning a little earlier, when I was explaining to the best of my ability why he cannot give messages, I think it was to Linda.
Yes, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That he can't make those soul connections. He is all over this galaxy and many others. And so it's a completely different type of light service from what he was doing before. You may remember that his original service, once the family's grief released him, or, well, he released himself from the family's grief, is more accurate, he started as a greeter in the soul transition service.
Oh, I remember that, yes.
Uh-huh.
That was beautiful.
And he worked his way up through the ranks to becoming, I guess he says director's good enough. it's not how they would think of that service there, because they don't go into rank and file type things, but he was the director of all of the soul transition teams, which go into the medical attention, and that may seem a little strange, but souls who die in traumatic circumstances, the souls never die. I want to go back there.
when a person transitions.
Well, no, the souls are removed from all of this. Mm-hmm. The psyches are what need the medical attention. And also, because etheric bodies are so closely tied to physical bodies, they may need to be received by a medical team leader and a team of 10 who lend their energy to usher in the etheric body. And then the etheric body is attended continuously until it has regained full strength. Now, the psyche is what is affected by the physical dying circumstances. For instance, the trauma on a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
The psyche, because the transitioning of the soul is lightning speed, the psyche enters nirvana with clear memory of the dying circumstances. Those psyches need to be carefully nurtured and treated by very highly trained and knowledgeable souls who treat them with vibrations of music and tone and color. Now, this is explained in Matthew Tell Me About Heaven.
Hello, Carolyn, can you all hear?
Yeah.
This is Betty Hightower. I'm calling in from Texas, and I'd like to recommend the Matthew books to everyone. I have all four, and I still reread them, and the people that are listening in the audience, you really need to get these books because they are a wealth of information.
Well, bless
Thank
you.
Thank you so much.
And can I say something about what Susie
wonderful.
Was saying about being
you
thankful?
Have them and you are speaking about them with You know, such respect and appreciation. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. I really mean that. They are a wealth of information, and I continue to go back and review them. Also, something, Susie, you said about being thankful. When I lost my sister and to cancer, I was in great grief, and I realized that I was looking at the situation from the wrong direction. And I decided that, you know, I should be grateful for the time that we have had together and not look at it from I'm losing her, but, you know, it was a gift to be with her. And so I then began to count my blessings. And then as I began to think of all the ways that we were blessed and the good times we had together, it just started rolling out, and I just couldn't stop. And so after that, I got this great sense of peace. And then as a result of that, even at the funeral, there was laughter. And I just want people to know how important that gratefulness and gratitude is.
Well, that's beautiful.
And thank you so much for having Susie
that.
On the program. I was just thinking last week, somebody needs to get her on BBS. Well, I'm going to let y'all
so
continue because this is very interesting.
Experience. And now you know how much you helped your sister. It wasn't just you who felt at peace. It was she who also felt at peace about you.
He might have hung up. I don't think he's there, Susie.
She may have, but
maybe he hears you on the internet.
But how providential that she did call in, that she was listening today,
mm-hmm.
and that she was able to bring peacefulness to herself by her outlook, by feeling thankful for the blessing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the different perspective.
Absolutely right. I had an experience similar to that when my son died. He was 16, and I had a lady tell me how her child had died at 3, and this was years ago, and all the pain was still there for her. And I realized that, gee, she only had 3 years with her son, and I had 16. It's like looking at a glass, is it half full or half empty? And it really does make a difference. So we really thank that caller for calling in and sending us all in that direction. And we're so glad he called in to tell you what a joy your books were.
Oh, yes, that was so gratifying for me to hear. And I want to mention something that, well, it actually isn't in the first book, because I just was inspired to include it. At the time Matthew died, I was working at the American College of Physicians, actually. I just speak of it as the college. But at the very same time, within days, the son of the president of the college, his son died at age 17, also in a vehicle wreck.
Yeah.
And one of the women who worked at the college,
mm-hmm.
She, after 20 years of trying to have a baby, she finally did. And her daughter was born, stillborn.
Oh, my.
There was another woman whose daughter died. She had minor surgery. She was doing beautifully, practically ready to be discharged, and suddenly died. Now, this is almost eerie because
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about less than probably 60 people and the 4 children dying almost simultaneously. And the woman whose daughter was stillborn came to my office to see me and said that people had told her, oh, how lucky you are that she, now you'll never know what you missed. And she said, how wrong they are. I would have given anything to have had her for 17 years like you had your son.
You know, that's very true, what you're saying, Suzanne.
Oh,
Women grieve over children who are stillborn as if they had lost a child that was living.
That bonding came. Mm-hmm. And to miss everything other than that I can't even imagine it, Carolyn. Something else I can't imagine that one of my dear friends went through was losing a child over a period of 2 years. Her child
I know, they're
was in her mid-20s.
Go through that.
And there was hope, and then hope dashed, and then hope again, and then hope dashed. It was the emotional peaks and valleys for 2 years. And I was spared that.
Mm-hmm. We can always look in the world and find that our situation is a little better, can't we?
We can.
Mm-hmm.
We can indeed.
And
Suzanne, another situation that I was spared, and so were
mm-hmm.
you,
yes.
and so are many, many people, is what happened to that dearest friend that I mentioned before. When her son was 17, he was kicked in the head by a horse, and he had such severe brain damage that he was aphasic, meaning that he was never able to speak again. Well, for two reasons he couldn't speak again. That part of his brain stem was destroyed, but also he couldn't order up words correctly. And that happened to Danny even before Matthew was killed. And it was as if he is now living in that body that is virtually immobilized. His cognitive abilities are as great as ever. Pap died a year ago. Danny's father, well, Pap's husband, Danny's father, died 5 years ago. And he is living in a home where he has assistance for everything. And you and I were spared that.
You know, while we're talking about this, Suzanne, maybe this is a good opportunity just to think about something. We have people that we love dearly, and we're in good health, and we don't always tell them that we love them enough.
I, Carolyn, you're right. We tend to expect them to know it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, when our family, when Matthew left our family, we realized the importance of doing this. So even though my daughter is visiting from Panama now, Matthew's other brother, our other siblings, the two brothers, live in Peru and Chile.
Mm-hmm.
But after, in every email, in every phone call, it's, I love you.
Yes, take a second and tell all those who are in your circle of love that you indeed love them. Let them feel it. Let them know it. I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention this to people, because it's so easy just to think, oh, they'll be with us forever, and take every moment that you can to show your appreciation and love to those around you, even if it's just a word, because your words are like gifts.
And the thought, the word, even the energy that goes forth in typing it on an email conveys its own light.
Yes. You know, while we're talking about light, if we might just change gears for a second, this was something else that I wanted to talk to you about and hopefully get some ideas from Matthew on this. There are some light workers in other countries where they feel that they really don't have freedom to speak out, freedom to work as they want to. And some of these people are feeling discouraged because they have such limited opportunities to do spiritual light work. And I'm wondering if Matthew can give us a little bit of hope that perhaps some of this will be changing soon. We know that the dark is going to be dropping off at some point, but does he have a perspective on this as to when we perhaps might see a little bit more freedom in the world?
He does. The year 2012 has been mentioned so frequently because of its significance in the Mayan calendar. It is misinterpreted as the end of the world. It's definitely not the end of our world, the end of Earth. It is the end of all darkness on the planet. Now, what Matthew has, and the people who have read his messages are aware that quite often when he has been asked questions about timelines, and it's understandable that people want to hold on to a time frame, but he has asked that we not do that. Linear time doesn't exist in the continuum. In the continuum, there's timelessness. And distances, our perception of distances is quite different from the universal actuality. So he's asking that we don't think of six more years or so of enduring this, because time is disappearing. It's collapsing, linear time. We do still need it because our brains comprehend things as history and today and the future. But actually, in the continuum, this everything, past, present, and future as we see it, is happening in a series of events simultaneously. The world that we are creating through generating love and light, and those are two sides of a coin. They're just expressed differently. So the world that we perceive as being created already is. Earth already is in the continuum, restored to her original Eden self. All of her life forms already are living in peace and harmony, and the animals are living peaceably with us. Technology, that which has been suppressed here, and the advanced technology of our extraterrestrial space family, that already has eliminated the pollution in our water, our soil, our atmosphere, life is, I mean, okay, what we consider global warming, it's actually Earth's return to a moderate climate throughout Earth. So deserts will be arable and flourishing. Every place on Earth will be habitable. I mean, all of these phenomenal changes that we perceive as, well, we're sort of seeing them happening because of even mainstream media, which is still controlled by the dark minds on Earth. Even if you follow the dots there, governments are changing. And a lot of what is going on is behind the scenes, or it is misinterpreted, like global warming. We can only perceive these things in light of what our science understands. And, okay, in another way, that we are growing consciously and even spiritually is the new perception of scientists, of everything interconnected, of the mass consciousness where there is no separation. So we can look at all of these changes as positive. And don't go into fear. Please do not go into fear. If you read something on the internet about, oh, a comet is going to go into the ocean and a tsunami is going to wipe out the entire East Coast of...
Yeah, we had heard a lot of that, didn't we?
Oh, did we ever. And then other predictions of 90% of the Earth's population is going to be wiped out by whatever...
Suzanne, we probably have 1 minute or 2 minutes at the most. This 2 hours has just gone by so quickly.
Oh, I can't believe it, Carolyn.
Well, what I would like to do to help relieve some of the fear that is going around, what does Matthew have to say in particular about perhaps some of the missile testing in North Korea or the programs that they're doing in Iran? Is all of this going to be handled peacefully, or is this just...
It will be. Several factors are at play here. Our extraterrestrial family used their technology to prevent any detonations in space that might be attempted, and several have been, by this elitist group that Matthew uses the umbrella terminology of Illuminati. Earth has decreed that there will be no more devastation on the scale of 9/11. And therefore God has authorized the stopping of all terrorist attempts, which on that scale are only by the Illuminati. A lot of information is put out as a pure fear tactic, because fear is what the darkness feeds on. It is both their fuel and their tool against us.
Well, Suzanne, I wanted to leave with that.
So please do not be afraid of anything.
I wanted to leave with that message of hope, because people are in fear of that. And might I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being here today. And if we might, can you promise sometime in the future you'll come back and tell us some more things that Matthew has given to you? Would you do that for us, do you think?
Oh, I would be happy to. we didn't even get into the other books and the messages from, oh, I think it's 13 in all.
Well, we're
going
to have to start with that the next time.
Yes, absolutely. I would love to do that, Carolyn. Just email me about it. Right now, I'm having computer glitches again, dear.
Right,
but,
right.
You know, eventually these will be resolved, too. And, yes, thank you so much
dear
for
heart,
all your light service.
Dear heart, bless you. And we all thank you for coming.
Oh,
take care.
You are so welcome. And Matthew and I, okay, I'm getting a chorus here.
Huh.
All of my other sources are sending love and light and blessings to everyone who is listening. Their love and light is with all of us. We are not making this journey alone.
Oh, bless you, dear heart. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Carolyn.
Talk
love
to you.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Dear.